Genesis chapter 32, I believe is where we left off last week. Been looking at Jacob as we're following our way through the book of Genesis and looking at each of the, what we call the patriarchs. Hopefully it's been an interesting study for you all and just kind of getting familiar with all these guys and finding some things from their lives and learning from them. And I enjoy seeing all the differences between them, seeing the variety in it, and how each of them has strengths, each of them have weaknesses, and how God deals with each of them slightly different. And as we're looking at Jacob last week, we followed Jacob as God used situations and circumstances to cause him to leave a profitable position working for Laban. As he was there working for Laban, he was gaining flocks and herds and wealth and riches. But it came a time that his heart was yearning to go back home. Came a time whenever Laban and his sons weren't all that happy with Jacob, because all of Jacob's prospering was at Laban's expense. It was that God was taking Laban's herds and transferring them one animal at a time over to Jacob. And so with these things, Jacob had decided he was going to leave Laban and that he was going to flee secretly while Laban was away and busy. And he did that because he was afraid. He was afraid that Laban and his family would try to prevent Jacob from leaving. He was afraid that Laban and his family would try to keep all his flocks and herds and his wives and his children and everything, and send Jacob away empty. And so he decided, while Laban is away shearing his sheep, while he and his sons are going a few days' journey away, it'd be a good time for me to take everything that I have and just run away. And kind of interesting that we find Jacob several times running away. We find him running away from Esau. We find him running away from Laban. And that's not exactly the most brave thing for him to do, but that's what he did anyway. And so whenever Laban discovered that Jacob and all of his herds and all of his wives and children were gone, Laban decided to pursue after him with the intentions of harming him. Everything that we find in that story, it seems that Laban had every intention of coming and absolutely causing as much damage as he could to Jacob. Probably end up killing him. But God prevented him from doing so. And so we ended last week as the two separated with what amounted to a peace treaty between the two of them. They built up a pile of rocks there, and they made their promises on top of each other and said, we're not going to pass across this little pile of rocks to do harm to the other person. And of course, Jacob wasn't ever intending to do harm to Laban, but Laban was wanting to do harm to Jacob. But anyway, they had their peace treaty, and Laban was now out of Jacob's life. And Jacob felt as if he could move onward and be happy about it. The only problem is, with Laban taken care of, Jacob must now face the fact that he and his brother did not separate on the best of circumstances. Remember, 20 years prior to this, he left because Esau wanted to kill him. He left because he had cheated Esau. He had lied and deceived his father out of the birthright and out of the blessing. And so now, as he's coming back, the realization hits him, and I'm sure this isn't the first time he thought of it, but the realization hits him that whenever I get back there, Esau's going to be in the area. And Esau wanted to kill me the last time I was there, so there's a chance that maybe he hasn't got over it yet. Now, that's pretty bad 20 years later. Have you ever seen someone who carried a grudge better than 20 years? I've heard plenty of stories. Heard lots of stories of people carrying grudges longer than that. So Jacob was wondering, is Esau still mad at me? Does he still want to kill me? And so it was unclear where they stood with each other even 20 years later. And so now he has to face his past. And so we'll look here in Genesis 32. I'm not going to read very much. I'm just going to read each section at a time as we come to it for the sake of time. But it says, and Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim, or something to that effect. And so as we're going through this passage, we find that they departed in verse 55. And if we continue in verse number 3, Jacob sent his messengers before to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And these two verses here, 1 and 2, kind of seem to be a little bit random. They seem to be an odd occurrence in Scripture, because we find just randomly, the Bible mentions, that he met this met these angels of God, and he said, this is God's host, and he renamed the place, and that name that I have trouble pronouncing there, it means two hosts, kind of like two armies. And so as Jacob is looking there, he sees that God has given him kind of a sneak peek into the spiritual realm. Jacob's been following God's instructions, and as he's arriving back in the land of Canaan, he meets this host, God's host of angels here. And as I said, he just kind of gets a sneak peek into the heavenly realm that's around him. And we're not really given a reason for this. There's not a whole lot said about it. It just says that he seen the angels, said this is God's host, and then we just jump right onto the next part of the story. But I believe that God kind of gave him this sneak peek in order to encourage him that he was following God and encourage him to continue trusting in God. And we can compare the events of these two verses with that in 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 13 through 17, whenever the prophet of God, I can't remember if it's Elijah or Elisha. Anyway, he has his servant there that's with him, and a huge host, huge army comes out of the enemy against them to try to find them and try to kill him. And he is not really too troubled by it, but his servant is definitely scared. And the servant keeps saying, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Elisha prays, Lord, open his eyes that he can see. He opens his eyes and he sees all of God's host, great host of angels that is surrounding them. And all of a sudden the servant wasn't scared anymore. He was ready to go because he's seen that greater was the number that was for them than the ones that was against them. And so I'm kind of thinking this is what God was doing for Jacob in this passage as well, is that he was showing that God's host was there in the area, that God's host may have even been traveling along with them at that time. And so it should have been something that would have encouraged Jacob, but it was short-lived, it seems like. Because when we pick up in verse number 3, it says, and Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, thus shall you speak unto my lord Esau, thy servant Jacob saith thus. And by the way, notice how he's referring to himself and to his brother. Mm-hmm. He's referring to he's referring to Esau repeatedly as my lord, and he's referring to himself as your servant. Yeah. So he's kind of preparing the way here, showing Esau that he's coming in peace. He's kind of putting himself in subjection to Esau at this time. And so it says, and he commanded them, saying, thus shall you speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith, thus have I sojourned with Laban and stayed there unto now. And I have oxen and asses and flocks and men servants and women servants, and have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight. I question his wisdom just a little bit in this passage, because he tells him, I have men servants and women servants, and I have great flocks and herds, and I'm telling you this to find favor in your sight. I'm coming to you as a wealthy herdsman with all kinds of servants, Esau. And that's important because we'll find out in just a minute how Esau takes it. Yes, he's referring to himself as your servant. He's referring to Esau as my lord, but he's sending word and saying, I'm a very wealthy man, Esau. Can you see where this might convey the wrong message to the guy who he was enemies with? And he says that he's telling him this, that I might find grace in thy sight. I'm not sure where that's exactly the best way of finding grace in his sight, telling about all of his wealth. But verse 6 says, and the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. That's not what Jacob wanted to hear. 400 men with him, that sounds like trouble. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two bands, and said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. And so he makes a plan here. Whenever he hears that Esau is coming with 400 of his servants. Now, the way this is written, yes, Jacob had men servants and women servants. But as Esau's coming with this band of 400, it seems to me that they were trained servants. They were ones who were trained for war, for protection. We find his grandfather Abraham, whenever Lot and the people of Sodom were carried away captive, that Abraham took less than 400 servants of his trained servants from his house and went after those kings and destroyed them and brought back the kings of the plains. You remember that passage? And so with that, we're finding Esau coming now with 400 of his servants, probably trained servants, probably fighters, some sort of warrior. Basically, Esau's coming with his army. And so Jacob is now afraid, and the first thing that comes to his mind, the best option for him, is let me at least split my herds and my family and my servants into two groups so that if one group gets massacred, the other group escapes. Okay? Now, question for you. Why was Jacob here to begin with? Who told him to go back to that land? God told him to. God told him to be there. He's there based on God's promise. We go back even further. Whenever he met God at Bethel, God says, I will bring you back here. I will multiply you. I will take care of you, right?
Yeah.
But what we find Jacob doing, Jacob is afraid. Mm-hmm. Jacob is concerned. Jacob is not necessarily exhibiting the most faith at this time. And I'm not saying that to belittle Jacob in any way. I'm just doing that. I'm bringing out that Jacob was a human being like any of us. Right. Because I guarantee you, any one of us in the same situation as Jacob would have reacted probably the same or worse.
Right.
And so Jacob basically decides, my brother's coming after me. There's a good chance he's going to try to kill me. So if we separate into two groups, at least he's not going to kill everybody.
Right.
At least there's a chance that some of them will escape and I'll only have half of what I started with instead of none of what I started with.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is his plan. But we have something good that comes from all this, because just after this, he has gotten to the place where there's nothing else he can do. And so he turns to God. And so anyway, I'm just kind of thinking with Jacob and Esau both, I think both of them are assuming the worst of each other. Okay? Esau's coming with 400. Is it because automatically he wants to kill Jacob? But he remembers what Jacob was 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, 20 years ago, Jacob was a trickster. Jacob was a supplanter. Jacob cheated me out of my birthright. Jacob cheated me out of my blessings. And now he's got wealth and he's got servants. And he's coming to let me know that he has wealth and servants. What's he going to do this time? And then Jacob, on the other hand, is saying, I left Esau hating me. Basically frothing at the mouth, wanting to kill me. And now that I'm coming back, and he's coming with 400 servants, what's he going to do to me? So both of them's assuming the worst about each other. Both of them fear the other one. Now, as we're going to be reading through this, just to get ahead of ourselves a little bit, by the time it's all said and done, both of them were afraid of something that never came to pass. How often do we do the same thing? We fear many things that never even happen. We get ourselves all worked up about instances and maybes and possibilities of things that never even come to pass. And that's what Jacob does in this time. And honestly, he's not trusting God in any of it. He is fearing. He's looking at all the circumstances and saying, it doesn't look good. I've got to find some way to get myself and my family through this. But like I said, a redeeming fact here in verse 11 through 13. Sorry, I'm on the wrong page, the wrong chapter here. Verse 9 through 12. Yes, verses 9 through 12. It says, and Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which said unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies, and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And so this was his prayer. And actually, it was a very beautiful prayer from a fearful man with wavering faith. And I think it's a great example of prayer, honestly, as we see this here. You look at his situation, he is afraid. He is, really, he's doubting. He's losing his faith here. I know there's a lot of emphasis on faith. Even on the wall, we walk by faith and not by sight. People are often ridiculed for having little faith. But Jacob had enough faith to reach out to God in his time of need. He had enough faith to be honest with God, to tell God what was going on, and to depend on God, even whenever he couldn't see any possible way this was going to go well for him. And so if we look at his prayer in verse 9, Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. So he begins his prayer. He acknowledges God and who God is. But then he says, I am doing what you've told me to do, God. I'm in your will. I'm doing what you said for me to do. Now, there's a great place to be whenever we're in a bad situation, whenever we can say, God, I followed you, and that's how I got in this situation. And in verse number 10, he says, I'm not worthy of the least of all the mercy, all the mercies and all the truth which I showed unto thy servant. Now, this is a big change for Jacob. Remember how Jacob has acted previous to this and how he is deceived and how he is tricked and how he has schemed and fought and all these other things. Now, as he stands before God, he says, I'm not worthy of any of this. I'm not worthy of the least of your mercies. I'm not worthy of the least of the truth that you have sent to me and showed to me. And he says, for with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I'm become two bands. He says, everything that I have comes from you, God. So verse 9, I'm doing what you told me to do. Verse 10, all I have is because of you. Verse 11, deliver me, I pray thee. In other words, he says, I don't stand a chance without your help. Total dependence. He's realizing his inability. And for someone who has schemed and plotted their way through life, as Jacob had, he's done everything by his intellect, by his wisdom, by his, he's got this far by his brains, okay? Yeah. He thought that he was a great man. He thought that he was able to work his way through any situation. And as he knelt here before God, he says, I am incapable of doing anything. I'm unworthy of the least of your mercies, and I can't do this without you. He finally got to the place where he was at the end of himself. He had to depend on someone besides himself. And so he's depending on God. And so in verse 11, I just read, he said, deliver me. And deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. There's honesty for you, raw honesty coming from Esau. I don't find Jacob being that vulnerable very often, but he was that vulnerable with God, that he would just come to God and say, God, I'm afraid. That's what he's saying, isn't it? God, I'm afraid. And so verse number 12, and thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and to make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So tells him, I'm going to trust you, God, and I'm going to hold you to your promises. God, you made promises to me a long time ago, and I remember those promises you gave to me, and I'm going to hold you to it. And so if you just go through just the highlight of the prayer that I said, he says, I'm doing what you said. All I have is because of you. I don't stand a chance without your help. And so I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to hold on to your promises. That's what he's saying in his prayer. That's a wonderful prayer that he prayed. And I think there's many times that we could pray something similar to that whenever we're going through struggles. And so after he prays, he does what he can. If you look at verse number 13 and continuing down through verse 23, it says, and he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto the servants, Pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, When Esau my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, Whose art thou? And whither goest thou? And whose art these before thee? Then thou shalt say, They be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, he is behind us. Behold, also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second and third, and all that followed the drove, saying, On this manner shall you speak unto Esau when you find him. And say ye moreover, Behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he arose that night and took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. And so after he prayed his prayer and said, God, I'm depending upon you, he then turns and does what he can to protect himself and to make way for his family here. Many say that this is another instance of Jacob just being Jacob. This is him using his wiles and his subtlety to be able to somehow protect himself and somehow pull one over on his brother. But really, I see a different Jacob here. Because in this portion that I read, Jacob says, okay, Esau's coming. He's got 400 soldiers with him. I've got all of this wealth and riches, and I'm going to take a portion of this, and I'm going to send it before me to Esau as a peace offering. And so it says that he sends some close to 500 animals, I think, maybe over 500 animals, before him, drove by drove. And so a servant and a whole flock, and they come along. And then there's a space, and there's a servant, a big flock, and they come along. And then a space, and a servant, a flock, and until all of these droves come by Esau. And with each one, as they come to Esau, of course, Esau is going to ask, okay, who are you? Where are you coming from? Where are you going to? Who do you belong to? And each of them is going to say, we are from Jacob, and this is a present to find favor in your sight, Esau. This is going to be yours now, Esau, and Jacob's coming behind us. And he gets to the second one and says, okay, what's going on here? So this is a present for you from your brother Jacob so that he can find favor in your sight. He's coming behind us. And the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And so like I said, this is a peace offering. As I said, this is a different Jacob than we've seen earlier. Always before, he's been a taker. Always before, he's been trying to figure out what can I get from them. Mm-hmm. But this time, he is giving this freely to Esau. Yes, it's trying to gain his favor, but he's owning the fact that he cheated Esau. He's seeking a reconciliation. He's trying to make restitution in this time because he knows he cheated Esau, and he's owning that. And he knew that Esau had the right to be mad at this time. We could see it possibly as a bribe, but like I said, I think more of it as being a peace offering to him. We even find that in the Mosaic Law later on. Whenever men trespassed against God, they were to come before him with a peace offering as well, making restitution. Even in other places, whenever a man stole from a man or caused harm to another man's livestock or his goods, he was to restore it and add to it, make restitution. And it seems to me that this is what Jacob was doing. And so he does act in fear rather than faith, but like I said, we do the same thing. So it shows that he was a human. And so I see that he was doing what he could, and then he was trying to trust God with the rest of it. There's an old saying that I don't believe to be true. It says that God helps those who can't help themselves. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. We find in the Bible oftentimes that God is helping those who will first put forth some efforts on their own, right? And this is what was going on with Jacob here. And so picking up at verse 24, down through the end of the chapter, it says, And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, Let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, thy name shall no more be called, shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel. For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. And Jacob asked him, and said, tell me, I pray thee, thy name. And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? And he blessed him there, and Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, for I have seen the face of, seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted on his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and the sinew that shrank, or in the sinew that shrank. And so we have another interesting kind of odd story that takes place here. After Jacob had sent his peace offering ahead to Esau, and he placed his herds and his families in strategic places, that's what was going on in verse 22 and or about 21 through 23 there. He put his families and his herds in strategic places to kind of try to defend them, try to put more protection, to have this fort of Jabbok and the brook and things in between them. And so now he faces a sleepless night. Because could you imagine all this going on? Jacob's not going to sleep. There's no way he's going to sleep. But to beat all of that, not only was it a sleepless night, it was also a very eventful night for him. Because it says here that a man wrestled with him. But in verses 28 and 30, we find out who that man was. It was more than just a man, but it was God that came and wrestled with him. We find here what's often called a Christophany. This is a pre-incarnate visit by God upon this earth. This was Jesus basically coming to the earth before Bethlehem. And so if you look at verse 28, it says, and he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel, for as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. Verse 30, Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Jacob knew who he was wrestling here. I find it interesting that he asked, what is your name? And he says, why do you ask after my name? Jacob knew who he was. He didn't need to ask his name. But anyway, going back to this just a little bit, as I said, he was more than a man there. God appeared to men several times in the Old Testament as a man. It's often referred to as the angel of the Lord. As you read through Scripture, it talks about the angel of the Lord there. We found another time of this happening whenever God appeared to Abraham and said, I'm going to destroy Sodom. Similar situation. And so, as I said, with Jacob wrestling with God in the form of a man here, it seems like a very odd situation to us. But it was to teach Jacob and to teach us both a lesson. Jacob had something to learn here, and we can learn something from Jacob. Jacob had been wrestling with God long before this night ever happened. We look at Jacob's life, it was a wrestling match with God. Especially since he met him in Bethel 20 years earlier. And so, although God could have easily overpowered a man, God chose not to. But Jacob refused to yield to the Lord until the Lord broke him. Literally. The Bible says that he touched the hollow of his thigh. Basically, he put his hip out of joint as he wrestled with him. And from that time, after his hip was dislocated, Jacob could no longer wrestle. But instead, he chose to hold on. Chose to hold on. You'd say he held on for dear life, right? Yeah. Because you can't wrestle with a dislocated hip. But he held on to God. And I find that a lot of times we do much like Jacob. We wrestle with God. There are things that God would have for us. There's directions that he would have for us to go in, choices he'd have for us to make, things that he'd have for us to do. But if there is a wrestling match, our will over God's. We find that Jesus prayed in the garden, not my will, but thine be done. Now, Jesus can pray that, but oftentimes we have trouble with that. Mm-hmm. We have our will, we have our desires, we have what we want, right. And God has something different for us. And so we engage in that wrestling match. And likewise with Jacob here, many times God has to end up breaking our will before we're willing to submit to Him. There are situations that God will put us in that will break us.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's kind of maybe off-putting to us to think of God breaking a person. I'm not meaning Him shattering them, crushing them, but breaking down their will so that they are willing to yield to Him. Whenever we're full of pride, whenever we're full of ourselves, God can have no power. He can have no control over a life like that. And so oftentimes He does bring things into our lives to break us in this wrestling match that we face. And so, like Jacob, whenever he breaks us, we need to cling fast to Him. See, Jacob was no longer wrestling with Him. Like I said, he was holding fast. And that's what we need to do as well as children of God. We need to hold fast to Christ. We need to hold fast to Him with all that we have and depend on Him rather than ourselves, rather than our abilities to wrestle, rather than our abilities to make our will known. We hold fast to Him. And not only was he holding fast to Him, he says, I won't let you go till you bless me. He was clinging fast to God, wanting the blessings of God upon himself. Now, Jacob has been wanting the blessings of God all of his life. That's one thing that we can say. He was spiritually minded, even if it was for a less than righteous reason. Because he deceived Esau out of his birthright, deceived Isaac out of the blessing. He wanted those things. Those were spiritual gifts to him. He wanted them, but he would go about them from dishonest ways. And so he says, I won't let you go until you bless me, in verse 26. And in verse 27, this is God speaking to him, and he said unto him, what is thy name? Now, as God was wrestling Jacob, he knew what his name was. You ever realize how many times God asked questions in the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
And there's never been a question that he asked that he didn't already know the answer to?
Right.
Lots of times in Scripture. Mm-hmm. And so he asked Jacob, he says, what is your name? I believe it's very important that he asked this here because you remember the last time that Jacob was trying to receive a blessing, he had the same question asked him. Isaac said, what is your name? And he says, I am Esau, your firstborn. You remember that?
Yeah.
And so he lied the first time he was after a blessing, but this time he says, I am Jacob. He's owning up to who he is because in the Bible, the names meant something. And I've already brought out that Jacob meant trickster, deceiver, supplanter. Okay, and so as he's wrestling with God, God has broken him, and he says, God, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. God says, what is your name? And he says, I'm a deceiver. I'm a trickster. I'm a supplanter. I'm Jacob. And God says, you aren't anymore. You're no longer that man. I've delivered you from that. I have been spending all of this time trying to get Jacob out of you the whole time that you've been down in the school of hard knocks down in Laban's house. Whenever you've been seeing the fruits of your trickery and your deception, now that you're coming back to Esau and you're facing all of the consequences of your years of deception and all of your trickery and the things that you've done, you are now you're now harvesting the seed that you've sown previously. Jacob's learning, Jacob's growing. And so God says, you're no longer Jacob. You're no longer a supplanter, a deceiver. You're now Israel. And the name Israel means a prince with God. It says you're now a prince with God.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big change from being the trickster, the deceiver.
Right.
And so, as God changed his name here, he's going to become a new man. Be a new man after God broke him, or we'll see that he wasn't a perfect man. No one is. But yet he was a new man. He never walked the same, both physically and spiritually. From that time on, he was going to have a limp, and it was going to be a constant reminder of that night whenever he wrestled with God and whenever God blessed him and changed his name. And so that brings us up to chapter 33. And there's not a whole lot I want to bring out of chapter 33, honestly. And so we'll go over this just quickly here. So he had his wrestling match with God, and on chapter 33, verse number 1, Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came. So it's a moment of truth, right? Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel, unto the two handmaids. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. By the way, if you're in Jacob's house, you never had to question where you stood with your father. Because he put them in order. He says, okay, we're going to sacrifice you all first, but Jacob, I'm going to put Joseph in the back here.
Yeah.
But this passage is showing you, this is foreshadowing a little bit. What do you think that the ones in the front thought of the one in the back? That's how he got in Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay? It was sowing discord among his family.
Right.
It was causing hatred between the sons because they saw where they stood with their father.
Right.
Anyway. Verse number 3, and it says, and he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Now, this is already something different that I'm seeing about Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Always before, he was putting everyone else before him. He was sending all of his flocks, his herds, he was sending his servants before him. He was even putting his least favorite wives in the front, right? But now it says that he went over before them as a true leader, right? He went over before them. Now, I believe Abraham and Isaac went over behind them. You remember whenever Abraham and Isaac met Abimelech, they were down in Gerar, and they said, oh, Rebekah and Sarah, they're not my wife, they're my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were afraid they would rather sacrifice their wives than to put their own neck on the line.
Right.
Jacob didn't follow suit. He went first and kept his wives and his children behind him. And so he's already came a ways with all of this. So I've got to hand it to him with that one. And so as he passed over before them, it says that he bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. So he's showing him respect, and he's showing him, just as he's been saying all along, I'm your servant. He's always been trying to get the upper hand over Esau, but now he's willingly bowing before him. He's been humbled by all of this. And so Esau is looking at all of this. He's seeing all the gifts that's coming toward him. He's seeing Jacob bowing. He's seeing Jacob limping along. That probably helped things along a little bit, didn't it? Hard to attack someone who's got a limp. And so anyway, Esau saw all of this. In verse 4 it says, and Esau ran to meet him. Of course, Jacob can't run anymore. Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. You know, that was kind of anticlimactic, wasn't it? We were expecting a fight. We're expecting battles. That's what Jacob and Esau were both expecting. But by the time they got to this point, they ran up to each other, to each other, threw their arms around each other, and embraced each other.
Yeah.
All of Jacob's fears were unfounded. And so, verse number 4, and he, Esau, lifted up his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, who are those with thee? And he said, the children which God hath graciously given thy servant. So he's still giving God the glory for this. He's saying, God gave these to me. The children which God hath graciously given thy servant. Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. Now, just to point this out, at this time, the oldest of his children, because they had been there 13 years after he'd worked the initial 7 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he'd had his wives for 13 years. His oldest sons would be around 12 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
The youngest ones being around 6. At this time, that would have been Joseph. And so anyway, they all came near, they all bowed down themselves. Verse 8, and he said, what meanest thou by all this drove which I met? And he said, these are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. So after he found out who the family was, and Jacob was able to introduce all of them, Esau said, okay, I get it, this is your wives, this is your children and everything. But what was the deal with all these animals that came by my way and they said they were a gift for me? What's going on with that? It was probably confusing to Esau because that was unlike Jacob.
Right.
Jacob was not a generous man.
Mm-mm.
And so Esau said, what did all this mean? And in verse number 9, the end of verse number 8, these are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. Jacob said, this is just so I may find grace in your sight. This was just to make peace with you. And verse 9 says, and Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself. So Esau was no longer greedy, wanting as much as he could get either. We find that he's matured a little bit along the way. And he says, I have enough. God's prospered me as well. He's given me enough. And so you just keep your stuff. I'll keep mine and we're grand. You don't have to send anything to appease me. In verse 10, and Jacob said, nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand, for therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. So he begs him, and he says, please just go ahead and take it. I am so thrilled that you're happy with me, that you've accepted me. I've seen your face as it was the face of God, which is kind of crazy because he actually just had seen God's face the night before. But anyway, he says, I've seen your face as if it had been the face of God. So I am so pleased that you're happy with me and that you've accepted me. So take my gift, take my offering. Basically what this meant to Jacob was if Esau takes this, then the debt is paid.
Mm-hmm.
He is forgiven, it is sure. If Esau refuses it, there's still a doubt in the back of his mind.
Right.
You see how this goes?
Okay.
And so Esau, if he accepts this, then he has to let Jacob off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is another reason why Jacob is pushing this so much. Do it for peace of mind, Esau. Take this off of me so I know everything's okay between me and you. And so he says, take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. By the way, both times here we see that Jacob is giving praise to God and glory to God. God's given me all these things. Now, I did say that Esau said, I have enough, and I mentioned God gave him that, but he doesn't give credit to God for the enough that he has. So we do see a little bit of a contrast between the two of those. And so anyway, Esau took it. Jacob was secure now because according to that culture, whenever he took the gift, everything was settled. And he said, let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee. So this was Esau speaking. He proposes this. He says, okay, Jacob, everything's good between us. I have accepted your gift, and I'm glad to see you. Neither of us are going to kill each other. We're now at peace with one another. So how about my servants and I go before you, prepare the way, you follow along behind us. Sounds like a nice gesture, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But Jacob refuses it. Verse 13, it says, and he said unto him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and the herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure, until I come, my Lord, unto Seir. So as Esau says, hey, we'll travel together, it'll be grand. Jacob says, it won't work. You've got all of your servants, all of them probably on horses or camels, or donkeys or some other kind of desert creature, I don't know. But all of them on their animals, and Jacob with his young children, and with his flock that has young with them. And so they're traveling at two separate speeds. And so he says, if I try to keep up with you, it's going to be too much on my kids. It's going to be too much on my flocks. And if we overdrive them, if we push them too hard, just one day they'll all die.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll lose everything. No, Esau, it's better if you just go ahead of us. We find a good lesson from this, by the way, a couple good lessons. For one, Jacob saw pretty quickly that they were unequally yoked. They were unequally yoked. Because Esau and his guys, like I said, traveled much faster. Jacob and his much slower. They couldn't travel together. It's a picture of them in their lives as well, because Jacob and Esau were going in two different directions. Not only was Esau going back toward Edom, Jacob going over toward Canaan, two different directions, but also their thought process, their spiritual life, everything was in two different directions. So he said, we can't travel together. He was respectful toward him. He was gracious with him, but he said, in the end, we can't travel together. And I think that's a good lesson for us to learn as well. We need to evaluate the relationships that we have as well. And be careful, because whenever we're going two different directions or toward two different goals, a lot of times we need to realize we're unequally yoked. And sometimes it's best just to be gracious and say, yeah, we're just not a good match. We're just not a good fit.
Right.
Maybe it'd be best if we go different directions.
Yeah.
Another good lesson that we can learn from this is Jacob's leadership here. Jacob had been a shepherd for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a shepherd over Laban's flocks for 20 years.
Yeah.
And so he had a concern for his flocks, but more importantly, for his own children.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, the oldest ones would have been about 12 years old. The youngest would have been 6 or a little less. And so with that, Jacob's looking out over all of his children, all of his flocks, and he says if they would overdrive them, if they would push them too hard,
yeah,
it will destroy them. Anyone who's ever in a position of leadership, whether it's parents with children, whether it's at work, or whatever it is, we need to be careful about how we lead, how forceful we are, how much we push. Christine was talking earlier about her and her family and things, and how it seems like maybe your mom pushed a little bit too much whenever you're growing up, and it caused your sister to be a little bit resentful toward that. But we've got to be careful how much we push. And so he says, I will lead on softly according to the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm going to pace myself by the slowest ones.
Right.
I'm going to pace myself by the most tender,
right,
by the most vulnerable. I'm going to be careful,
mm-hmm,
at the pace that I go, because if I don't, it's going to cause harm to people.
Yeah.
And there's been many people in leadership that have pushed too hard,
mm-hmm,
that haven't evaluated the ones that they were leading,
right,
and they caused harm.
Yes.
And so it seems like Esau, after hearing Jacob's thoughts on this, he says it makes sense. He says, I can see your point from this. So he doesn't push it. Instead, Esau says in verse 15, let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me. And he said, what needeth it? Let me find grace in thy sight of my Lord. So Esau says, since I can't keep my entire company, since we can't travel together because you all are slow because of the weak ones amongst you, and we're very fast and we want to push you along, how about I just leave a handful of men with you to help you along, help you with taking care of your flocks, help you protect you from any kind of trouble along the way, because there were thieves and robbers and different things. He says, how about I just leave some of my men with you? And Jacob says, what needeth it? I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Go ahead and take your men. And he says, I'll make it along in my own time. And so he says, let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house, and made booths for his cattle, and therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. And so in verses 16 and 17, we see a reason why he wouldn't accept the help from Esau. He wouldn't keep any of Esau's men along behind, and he wouldn't travel together with him, because as I brought up earlier, they're going two separate directions.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob was going to Succoth, and Esau was going to Seir down in Edom. And if you can think of, if you've looked at a map of Israel, and the area there, you've got at the top, you've got the Sea of Galilee, you've got the Jordan River, you've got the Dead Sea down at the bottom. And so over along this side, you've got Israel's land. And then down here at this corner, just off from the Dead Sea, you have the land of Edom. And so Jacob was going down through Israel, Esau over in Edom. They're going two different directions, separated by the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and the Dead Sea. Specifically the Dead Sea. And I find that kind of interesting there, that the Dead Sea stood between them. But that's just my own thoughts going, okay? And so anyway, whenever Jacob journeyed to Sukkoth, which means booths, it says that he built a house, made booths for his cattle there, and named the place Sukkoth. He set up camp. He got just a little bit further than where Esau had met him at, just barely over in Canaan, barely over in the Promised Land. He hadn't made it yet back to Bethel, where he had met God, where God says, I'm going to be with you and I'm going to bring you back here. He hadn't made it back to the land of his people yet. He stopped short. Kind of similar to Abraham, kind of similar to the children of Israel whenever they came out of Egypt. They stopped short of the Promised Land. And that's kind of what Jacob does here. And so he makes his booths. He has his house. And by the way, he's the first of the patriarchs to have a house. Before that, they were all known as sojourners. They were all nomads. They were all known by their tents, their tabernacles. Jacob, the first one to have a house. And so he built his house. He had all of his barns and stalls for his cattle and settled there for a little bit of time. And there's a decent amount of time that transpires between chapter 17, or not chapter 17, verse 17 and verse 18. And it says in verse 18, and Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. And so between chapter 17 and 18, Jacob has built a house, built all the booths and everything for his flocks, and then moved out of his house and his booths and got back in the tent and came to Shechem. Another reason I say that there's some time that passed, whenever we get to chapter 34, we find that his daughter Dinah, which would have only been probably 10 at the oldest, and that may have been pushing it, only about 10 at the oldest whenever he arrived in Sukkoth, whenever she comes to Shechem, she is of age to marry. So we figure maybe they spent 6 years in Sukkoth. And so in 18 it says, and Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of field. So it says specifically, now they are in Canaan. They made it back to the land that God had promised them. They're now in Canaan, and now he buys a parcel of ground. Abraham bought a parcel of ground only for a burying place. Right. Isaac never bought any ground that we know of because God promised that land to them. Mm-hmm. But now, rather than being a pilgrim and a stranger, he now buys a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And so now he's a landowner in Canaan. He's ready to settle down. He's ready to start farming there, to build up his herds, to build up an inheritance for his children. This is what he's decided to do. In the next chapter, we're going to find he would have been a lot better off if he would have kept one to Bethel. Yeah. He would have been much better off had he not ever stopped at Shechem. Mm-hmm. Because we find that his children have learned quite a bit from Jacob. Mm-hmm. Not Israel, from Jacob.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we'll get to that next week. But we'll end here on verse number 20. It says, and he erected there an altar. Now, I believe this is the second altar we find that he erected. The first one was whenever he was there with Laban. He erected there an altar, and he called it Elohi Israel. And that's the best I can do in pronouncing it. But what that name means is God, the God of Israel.
Yeah.
And this is a big step for Jacob, because for one thing, he is identifying himself by the name that God has given him. I know I've still been calling him Jacob all along,
right,
but now he's calling himself by the name of Israel.
Right.
He has adopted his new name. Not only that, but he says, the God of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You remember whenever he met God at Bethel, all the way back in chapter 28?
Yeah.
You can look back there if you want to. But all the way back in chapter 28, in verse number 21, he had met God there, you know, the vision of the ladder down on the earth and up in the clouds. Verse 21, I'll read verse 20 as well. And Jacob vowed a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God." Up until this point in time, Jacob continually refers to the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of my fathers. But in this last verse of chapter number 33, verse number 20, he says, he's now my God. He's no longer the God of Abraham and Isaac. He's the God of Israel. And so this has come kind of full circle here. So in this 20-some years, a lot's happened in Jacob's life. A lot of changes has taken place, but God has been orchestrating it all along. God has been taking care of him. God has been guiding him. God has been giving him the blessings that he said that he would give him. God protected him from Laban. God protected him from Esau. God protected him from himself and was with him all the time. I think a lot of times we neglect to realize how much God is really doing in our lives, how much he's really guiding us, how much he's really directing us, how much he's really taking care of us. And we're seeing that in Jacob's life. And as I've said before, it's not just Jacob that God does that to. He'll do that to each and every one of his children. Mm-hmm. So does anyone have any questions or comments on these passages? You have something? Okay.
Just thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's go ahead. We'll go to the Lord in prayer. Next week we'll be in chapter 34. Not near as happy time for Jacob. I know he had a stressful time this time. It gets worse. So anyway, let's go to the Lord in prayer. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Thank you for your blessings. Thank you so much, Lord, for this time in your word, from the things that we can learn from it. And Lord, I just pray, ask you, Lord, just to help us to meditate on this throughout this week, Lord, and see how you cared for Jacob and how you worked in his life and how you work in ours as well, Lord. And help us, Lord, to trust and depend upon you. And Lord, we just thank you so much for all you do. I ask you to be with all those who were unable to be here this evening. I know several people have different things going on. And Lord, we just love you and we thank you for all you do. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.